Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Alicia Sikkim, standing in for Siki this evening, tackling your questions in studio tonight. Nick Crail from Ashburton Investments and Nessa Naya from Sasfin Securities as well. Don't forget to send those questions through to us via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us in studio this evening. Let's get straight into it because all eyes still on US-China trade talks and the kind of implications this is going to have on the growth scenario moving forward. Ness, and I was asking one of the brokers earlier this afternoon whether, you know, you're seeing any movement in your positioning in the markets right now, or you're merely captivated by this all playing out and it being like watching a bad movie that you can't take your eyes off.
Listen, you've always got to keep a close eye on movements, but the nature of our investment philosophy is long-term. So the shares we pick need to be fairly resilient to these sort of, you know, short-term changes in sentiment. Having said that, if there's an escalation in this trade war in China, and for a long time it was just an abstract thing, you know, you could imagine it was a group of guys from Washington and from Beijing sitting in a room and having a dispute or an argument and then, you know, going home at the end of the day. But I think when Google announced that it was going to stop services to Huawei, and that started affecting consumers, I think that really hit home for a lot of people, particularly investors, who said, well, this may actually affect, you know, global trade, cross-border earnings, that sort of thing. And I think from our perspective, I mean, we still maintain a very healthy exposure to technology shares,
yeah,
global technology shares. And, you know, notwithstanding the current trade tensions, and I don't think they'll escalate, but I also don't think that that you should sell out of your portfolio and hold in cash.
Okay, that despite some of the risk that prevails already, we're starting to see some of the implications start to filter through. If you're looking at the global growth picture, disappointing manufacturing data coming through from the Eurozone territories today, U.S. manufacturing growth measuring its weakest pace off growth in nearly a decade. You know, do we draw direct correlations and say it's as a result of these negotiations, or still too early to tell?
I think a little bit too early to tell. I think, I mean, if you have a look at the markets and how they react to news flow, I'll take you back to December of last year, where the market was convinced the US was going to continue hiking almost into perpetuity. At the same stage, this trade war thing was a real sort of threat, so having large implications. Suddenly it looks like, the rhetoric is dialed back slightly. And what does the market do? Forgets that it ever existed. And, you know, ratchets up significantly through until April of this year, the end of April. And then suddenly, like a surprise, like the market could have never seen it coming, back we are talking about trade wars and it escalates significantly. I think the reality here is that and where investors should be sort of positioning themselves is that Donald Trump does not seem to be a man who is really fundamentally wanting to, I suppose, experience the pain of, let's say, financial markets really collapsing in a heap. So short-term significant pain in order for his sort of long-term ambitions to sort of play out. Yeah. And for that reason, I'm not 100% convinced that you're going to see this continue to escalate significantly. If the markets continue the reacting the way they are, I think he'll start dialing back a little bit of that rhetoric.
Nevertheless, these are amongst the risk factors that the Saab has had to take into consideration. It's held pat on interest rates, pretty much as expected, I guess, but throwing somewhat of a curveball, though, into this equation, saying that we should be anticipating a rate cut first quarter of next year. Were you surprised at all?
Not at all. At the previous MPC, there was, I wouldn't call it a 180-degree turn, but certainly a much more dovish stance coming out of the Saab. And this was, you know, given that we had an increase in the oil price, a slightly weaker currency, it didn't seem that, there was enough to be dovish about. But I suppose, you know, with the elections coming in, with the government's new growth agenda, mm-hmm, obviously on the table, even though they say that it's not their mandate, to be concerned about growth, I think given the absolute level of growth in the country, they have to be cognizant of it. And I think with inflation in the sort of 4.4% target range, core inflation looks like it's subsiding. There's scope to cut rates into the future. You know, one could argue that they shouldn't have hiked rates the last few times, but that's in the past now. I think looking ahead may make a little bit more sense to be a little bit softer on monetary policy.
Okay, of course it's within this scenario, you know, shaky growth and local concerns that we saw companies at a stage pursue their, you know, offshore ambitions. Mediclinic was amongst the lot. Now, writing down the value of its investments in the UK, in Switzerland as well. How are you feeling about Mediclinic post the results it's put on the table today?
Not great, to be honest. I think, I mean, again, politics rears its ugly head here. And I suppose when looking at Mediclinic, on the one side, you understand that more and more people require healthcare sort of services. There is a fundamental sort of growth argument behind companies such as Mediclinic. However, and I think what is far more important and what has certainly played out more recently, and I think will continue playing out, is the regulatory sort of framework, which has really been hampering these sort of growth ambitions of these sort of companies almost globally. And that certainly doesn't seem to be abating. So certainly not for Mediclinic over the last 12 months, who has landed in Switzerland coming under further scrutiny. And I think looking forward, the probabilities that you know, countries and states, governments themselves will further regulate and really sort of require margins to be compressed is probably going to play out. So not an easy place to be at the moment, and certainly not a place I'd really be too interested in being invested at present.
Do you feel the same?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mediclinic is probably in four of the hardest geographies for healthcare or hospital companies in the world. You know, in Switzerland, which is the bulk of their business, really. They've got tariff issues to deal with and migration from inpatient to outpatient, which is at a much lower margin. Similar thing happening in South Africa. The UK, I mean, the investment there in Spire is exactly the same thing that's happened to Netcare's BMI. There's just, you know, not enough money to make these guys profitable at the margins that they need to be in. And of course, the UAE is probably a little bit more of a turnaround story for Mediclinic, but it's not that big in the scheme of things. I think they need to get Switzerland right. And you saw in these results, they're still struggling with Switzerland. I think it's going to be a long haul for them. So it's not something that, it's not one that we hold or that we would, you know, consider investing in right now.
Let's hone in on Brait, also out with numbers. Its shares dropped to a seven-year low today after it said that the net value of its assets had fallen sharply amidst challenging conditions. Even with that reduction in net asset value, the stock trading at a gaping discount. We've had a question coming in. Brait's trading at roughly a 50% discount to NAV, and John Bickard has it in his Investec Value Fund. What's the panel's opinion on buying Brait?
Well, certainly I think looking at any company that's trading at a discount to the NAV makes it look relatively attractive. Your big worry there is what's going to happen first. Either that discount closes and you make some money, or alternatively, the NAV itself comes back to where the share is currently
trading. And the discount closes.
And the discount closes. So in that environment, I think if you have a look at the assets that it holds at the moment, I mean, some relatively good quality assets, but I take you back to the significant premium that this was trading at back in early 2016, the end of 2015, at a share price of 170 Rand, I think, was pretty much its top. Now at 20 Rand, and I'm not sure, to be honest, that the pain is over. So as much as there's value, I would use that sort of old adage, is it a value or a value trap? Here I'd be concerned that it could be a value trap.
Okay, and I'm assuming a consensus from your side.
Yeah, pretty much the same.
Okay, let's take a look at Massmart. We've had a viewer write in saying, so now will unions stay out of bad business and good investments by not stuffing up future investments as they did those years ago with Walmart? Let's take a look at Massmart in that context. I mean, is it going to be turning the tide? Does a new CEO coming through from Japan with the profile that he boasts, you know, on that end necessarily spell a turnaround for this company?
Is he I wonder, is he like the Ray Donovan fixer? You know, is he going to wave a magic wand and make all the problems disappear? If you look at the trading update, I think it was a 10-month trading update that they sent through. There's a common theme that's coming through, you know, with Massmart. It was also with Pioneer early on in the week. It was with Tiger Brands. They're getting some revenue increase, but cost increases are so much larger that invariably, you know, profits are shrinking. And if you ask yourself, you know, where are the costs coming from? You know, it's logistics, it's petrol price increases, it's administered price increases. It's a normal sort of cost that affect a business that needs to trade on a daily basis. The concern around revenue increases, I think, is a lot more related to what's happening in the economy, consumer confidence, that sort of thing. So I don't think you're going to see these businesses perform. There's not much that they can do themselves unless there's a fundamental shift upwards in the South African growth environment.
Yeah.
Without that, it's very difficult, you know, to see how they can improve their current situation, or whether a drop-in CEO from Japan is going to make much of a difference.
Exactly. And I know the viewers written in asking about union involvement in businesses and whether that acts as a deterrent to future investments that could potentially offer some kind of turnaround strategy for companies within a challenging environment. But, you know, also to bear in mind is that these companies operate in a very socio-economic volatile environment.
Yes, certainly. So, I mean, if you have a look at our unemployment levels, we require employment. What is going to generate that is capital and the ability or availability of, an interest in employing people. So, you know, it depends which sort of line you really want to focus on. The one would say that, you know, the existing labor needs to be paid more, and the disparate gap, I suppose, between what a CEO earns and what your minimum labor earns isn't right and should be sort of rectified in one way. And on the other side, saying, you know what, at 37%, let's call it unemployment, perhaps we forget about that and just try and get everyone work and experience and ultimately close that gap a little bit later on. Currently, our labor laws don't exactly encourage significant employment, specifically not in your small and medium enterprise sort of space, which is really what probably needs to be the growth vector that needs to drive us forward as an economy over the next sort of 5-10 years. So I think there's some work to be done there, making it a little bit more attractive.
Yeah. Before we head into break, and while we're on this topic of solving an unemployment situation that seems unretractable at the moment, Nathan, I want to take a look at AdCorp because it's released results very recently, and the viewer wants to take a look at the company, just looking at its role, because it's been very emphatic about the shift it's made in upskilling, training, a workforce in South Africa that does become employable down the line.
So they're involved in, I think, four different areas. Training is one of them, but the biggest contributor is this temporary employment business that they do. And they were dealt a really rough blow last year in June with the Constitutional Court ruling indicating that, if an employee earning under 205,000 a year worked for more than 3 months, and effectively he had similar rights to what a permanent employee had. And so it put a question mark as to, you know, where they fit in the whole employment scheme. Of course, unions want to do away with labor brokers like AdCorp as well, which doesn't help them. I think there is a need to build skills, though. And we need businesses like AdCorp who are able, you know, to get in people without any experience, train them, and place them. What happens after that, I think, is very much a function of the individual, you know, how they want to take their career. And we need to build a culture around, in the country, around employees, you know, wanting to improve themselves. That's something that's important.
Okay, let's hit pause on the conversation for now. It's time for a quick break. Keep sending through your questions via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back, and let's take a quick look at what international markets are up to right now. As you can see, they're still under pressure. S&P 500 pulling back 1.6%, the Nasdaq close enough to 2% lower, and the Dow 1.5% in the red. Those tech companies are still coming under quite a bit of pressure today on the back of uncertainty around the U.S.-China trade talks and broader implications as companies get involved. Across the Atlantic in the meantime, more of the same playing out. FTSE 100 down 1.4%, CAC 40 pulling back 1.8%, and the DAX down by a very similar margin there. Of course, Eurozone data filtering through today, not very encouraging in terms of what it speaks to regarding the growth scenario on that front. Still with me in studio, Nick Crail from Ashburton Investments and Nathan Nayar from Sasfin Securities. securities. Gentlemen, let's get back into the questions that are coming through. Sasol, of course, has triggered quite a lot of angst amongst investors this week, of course, running over budget with regards to their Lake Charles project in Louisiana. What has Sasol board and executive done about correcting the incompetency of the previous round of gross mismanagement and this round of mismanagement? I don't know if you've got that answer, but are you convinced that they're doing enough, I guess, at this stage of the game?
Well, what they really have done is brought in a specific sort of project manager to go through things. Now, that's from December of last year, to make sure that everything is being run 100% above board and as efficiently as possible. And I suppose that person is the person that is responsible for uncovering the fact that, no, it's not being run as it should. And, you know, ultimately you push up your sort of costs. Now, you know, once you're 90% complete, to come up and say, we're just kidding, it's going to cost another $1 billion before we actually kind of get there, is something that the market does not like at all,
especially
as is evidenced
if it comes
in the share price
so quickly. I mean, 3 months, you rack up a bill of over 1 billion rand that you didn't expect.
And it may not be the final figure. Now, I read wide-eyed at some of the reasons why there was this $1 billion overrun. And it was, you know, inaccurate forecasts. It was engineering defects that needed to be corrected. It was, one of the reasons they gave was that these heat exchangers had corroded. It's a brand new plant. Okay, it's in the Gulf of Mexico, which is, I suppose, you know, quite humid, kind of like a Durban climate. But you wouldn't expect things, you know, to start corroding before the plant is even up and running. So I just wonder, you know, whether or not they had the right service providers there, whether there was sufficient oversight. And I suppose that's why you need this project manager to come in now. The concern I have is that the initial estimate for this project was 9 billion. Mm-hmm. We're now close to 13. And with this is a pure conversion business, converting ethane into ethylene. So there's only a conversion margin, which is a very slim margin, to be made here. And they funded the bulk of this from debt. So if they get a return on this investment of, and they're projecting about 6%, and you're sitting at 5% debt, there's only a 1% net margin you can make. If there's any additional cost overruns, this project runs into negative profitability, which I think is a concern for a lot of investors. I hope they get it right. It's a big, big investment, and it's a big part of their balance sheet. And I hope it doesn't affect the payment of dividends.
Absolutely. I mean, it was, set to be a game changer for Sasol. And now, as time progresses, one wonders just how much of a whittling away to that game changer status we could be anticipating. A quick look at Naspers and Anglo American. Is now the time to sell at current prices, or do you see upside in these shares? So let's perhaps split them. Naspers on your side, Nick.
Yes, I think there's a lot of value in Naspers at the moment, and I think here's actually the perfect opportunity to almost buy a little bit more. So really come off very much in line with Tencent, probably 15, 17% so far this month. Yes, nowhere close to where its lows were back in sort of October of last year. But having said that, I think that the fundamental sort of shifts for that business should continue to be supportive for its fundamental growth looking forward. And now you're not paying up necessarily for that sort of opportunity set. So I certainly wouldn't be selling it at these sort of levels. I do expect some sort of recovery. And I actually would be having a look at taking it a little bit more.
How are you feeling about Anglo American?
Listen, I think, you know, when it comes to Anglo American, you've got to look at why the price has fallen from more than 400 to under 350 now. And you can attribute it to a drop in commodity prices. I mean, from palladium, platinum, coal stocks, even copper has come down. Mm. Iron ore is slightly higher, over hovering around the 100 level. But that's what's driving the price at the moment. Fundamentally, I mean, this company is, you know, virtually debt-free. They still have some of the best assets in those commodities all over the world. Mr. Anil Agarwal from Vedanta is still hopefully, you know, looking to acquire majority interest in this, because he wants to secure, you know, commodities for India's infrastructure rollout, which is inevitable, given what's taking place in China. So I wouldn't be in a hurry to sell it, you know, if I'm a long-term investor. Short term, I think there may be a little bit more pressure on commodity prices. So as a trader, there might be a good argument to sell it now and maybe get in at a lower level. But it's something that you want to have for the long term.
Okay, for now, iron ore prices, even though, you know, slightly better than the others, are seeming to boost Afrimat in a very big way today. A viewer writing in asking, Afrimat, in such a bad construction environment, how are they doing it? It can't just be iron ore prices, can it? If it is, things may only get better for them. It seems like iron ore is in the bull market.
So it's a fortuitous timing, I think, for them, make no mistake. A couple of years ago, effectively acquiring this mine from sort of bankruptcy, and so really paying almost nothing for it. And ultimately, you've seen iron ore prices spike significantly post that. Have had some teething issues, I suppose, with Transnet and trying to make sure they can get that down to the coast and off to China. But holistically, it looks as though it's been a fantastic sort of asset for them, and I think they'll look at exploring that a little bit further. I think this is a very well-managed managed company, and ultimately they've also had the benefit in a very sort of tough environment to have the ability to pick up certain skill sets, I suppose, from other companies that have really been struggling and effectively put those to work. So they're sitting, I think, pretty at present, but you know what, again, any sort of commodity company, you're going to do things at a certain margin and you don't really control the end cost. So, you know, iron ore prices fall in an absolute heap or Transnet Rail absolutely falls over. There's risk, make no mistake about it. But so far, things doing quite well.
Yeah, it's diversification strategy, as we've been talking about, paying off for it nicely. It's also looking to pursue that even further in a potential coal transaction in Australia.
I think they have to, because, you know, construction materials in South Africa is in a state of decline. And, you know, we don't see that many new infrastructure projects coming up. And it's a low margin business. There's much bigger players than Afrimat, you know, certainly on the quarry side. A need to diversify earning streams away from the construction industry, I think, was the reason that they got into iron ore, and they had a complementary set of skills, because essentially, you know, you're basically digging into the ground.
Yeah.
You know, I get nervous when people decide to, you know, pursue sort of marginal assets in other geographies throughout the world.
Okay.
But having said that, I mean, these guys have proven themselves as very good operators.
Okay, so if that makes you nervous, so what are you more convinced by? What's your stock pick this
week? I'm going with a South African company, well, an international company listed in South Africa, Mondi, with South African roots. I can't reconcile why the share price has fallen down so much. I mean, they came up with a trading update. It looks relatively good. And I think this is just a sentiment thing that's knocking it in the short term. But certainly from a long-term perspective, Mondi looks good at these prices.
Nick, yours?
Mine is a South African company, largely, and that's Bidvest. This is a company that really is, I suppose, the darling in terms of management and execution of the South African, let's say, dour industrial type of space. Having said that, I do think what we've seen recently is a lot of foreigners selling out of that. We've seen significant share price pressure on Bidvest. Back to, I would say, you know, at worst, fair value, probably slightly less than fair value. But again, if actually things calm down in a trade war sort of environment and foreign investors want to come and take a little chunk out of South Africa, which I believe they will, Bidvest is going to be the darling and it is going to appreciate quickly from these levels.
Okay, let's leave it there with that glass half full view on things. Gentlemen, thanks so much for having joined me in studio this evening. Of course, my guests, Nick Crail from Ashburton Investments and Nessa Nayar from Sasfin Securities. We take more of your stock-related questions next week. Have a good evening. What's your stock pick this week?
I'm going with a South African company, well, an international company listed in South Africa, Mondi, with South African roots. I can't reconcile why the share price has fallen down so much. I mean, they came up with a trading update. It looks relatively good. And I think this is just a sentiment thing that's knocking it in the short term. But certainly from a long-term perspective, Mondi looks good at these prices.
Nick, yours?
Mine is a South African company, largely, and that's Bidvest. This is a company that really is, I suppose, the darling in terms of management and execution of the South African, let's say, dour industrial type of space. Yeah. Having said that, I do think what we've seen recently is a lot of foreigners selling out of that. We've seen significant share price pressure on Bidvest. Back to, I would say, you know, at worst, fair value, probably slightly less than fair value. But again, if actually things calm down in a trade war sort of environment and foreign investors want to come and take a little chunk out of South Africa, which I believe they will, Bidvest is going to be the darling and it is going to appreciate quickly from these levels.
Okay, let's leave it there with that glass half full view on things. Gentlemen, thanks so much for having joined me in studio this evening. Of course, my guests, Nick Crail from Ashburton Investments and Nessa Nayar from Sasfin Securities. We take more of your stock-related questions next week. Have a good evening.